All right, so like how about this for a wild case?
Yeah.
The aftershocks of 9/11, like slamming into the usually predictable world of contracts.
Yeah.
Just picture it. You've got a hotel company, insurance, a loan agreement, and then bam, this massive global event like reshapes everything.
Wow.
We're going deep on Omni Berkshire Corp v. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Okay.
A case that shows how even a phrase as basic as like all risk can turn into a legal showdown.
Interesting.
And this isn't just some, ancient legal history. This case has some real lessons for, well, pretty much anyone who deals with contracts, which,
Right.
let's be honest, like almost everyone at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we all encounter eventually.
Totally. What's really fascinating about this case
Yeah.
is how it makes us think about all those assumptions we make when we sign contracts.
You know, all those things we just sort of take for granted, like, oh, yeah, of course, that's how it works. But
Right.
then something totally unexpected happens.
Exactly. It's like, what happens when the world throws you a curveball, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So for this deep dive, we've got like legal briefs, court opinions, some expert analysis, the whole shebang.
Nice.
So let's set the scene. Back in 1998, Omni Berkshire, they owned a bunch of hotels, needed a huge loan. We're talking like $250 million to, keep things going.
Yeah, it's a lot of cash.
Right. Secor Financial Corp comes in to provide the loan, but like with any big loan, there's always that, fine print.
Right.
Part of the deal was that Omni agreed to keep up comprehensive all-risk insurance on those hotels. Seems pretty straightforward, right? Cover everything, just in case.
Yeah, you think so?
But as we're going to see, like the devil's always in the details.
Absolutely. And to really grasp the significance here, we need to sort of rewind back to 1998 for a second.
Okay.
At that time, terrorism coverage wasn't really a major thing in the insurance world. It wasn't something that was like typically excluded from your standard all-risk policies. So when Omni and Secor agreed to this all-risk thing, it's pretty likely that neither side was specifically thinking about acts of terrorism.
So it was just like a non-issue back then.
Pretty much, yeah. Like it wasn't even on their radar.
Then, well, as we all know, 9/11 happened.
Right.
The world, it like shifted on its axis.
Yeah.
And the whole insurance industry had to scramble to like adapt to this suddenly very real threat. And that is where things get a little messy for Omni.
Because in the aftermath of 9/11, yeah, insurance companies, they started specifically excluding terrorism from their standard all-risk policies.
Oh, wow.
It became like a whole new ball game.
So it became its own separate thing.
Yeah, requiring its own separate coverage.
Okay, so then in comes Wells Fargo. They took over servicing Omni's loan,
Right.
and they saw this new landscape after 9/11 and got, well, understandably a little nervous.
Sure.
They had a responsibility to protect their lenders' investments. And a major terrorist attack on, one of these big hotels
Yeah.
could be a financial catastrophe.
Huge problem.
Huge problem, right?
Totally.
So they did what any cautious lender probably would do. They pointed to this clause in the loan agreement that said Omni had to have other reasonable insurance as like requested by the lender. And you guessed, they asked for separate terrorism insurance.
Makes sense.
Right.
From their perspective, yeah. I mean, Wells Fargo's position seemed pretty reasonable given everything that had happened.
Totally.
I mean, the threat was real, separate coverage was becoming like the industry standard,
Yeah.
and they had this contractual duty to, safeguard the lenders. But Omni, on the other hand, they pushed back like hard.
Really?
Yeah, they argued that being forced to buy this extra insurance was like this massive unforeseen expense, and that's where the legal battle kicks off.
So suddenly there are these like two huge questions swirling around this whole case.
What are those?
First, did comprehensive all-risk insurance, as people understood it back in 1998 when they signed that contract, actually require terrorism coverage, even after 9/11 when the whole insurance landscape had changed so drastically?
Right.
And second, even if all-risk didn't like automatically include terrorism after 9/11, was Wells Fargo's request for this separate coverage actually reasonable under the terms of the contract,
Yeah.
considering this new reality they were all dealing with?
It's a good question.
It is. So let's try to tackle that first question, this whole all risk ambiguity.
Okay.
Yeah, you might think all risk means, well, all risks.
Right. Yeah, that seems pretty logical.
But the legal world loves to, keep us on our
It
toes.
does. It does.
The courts, they have to think about context, industry standards, even like what was in the minds of the parties back when they signed the contract.
Yeah.
This is where it gets really, really interesting.
Okay.
The court had to, like, dive deep into how the insurance industry itself understood all risk back in 1998.
Uh-huh.
And what they found was, back then, terrorism coverage was usually included in those standard all-risk policies.
Mm.
Like, it wasn't something you had to bargain for.
So it was just sort of baked in.
Yeah, exactly. Which, I mean, it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
If nobody's really thinking about a certain risk, they're probably not going to write, like, specific language about it in a contract.
Yeah, it just wouldn't be a priority.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It was just kind of, like, assumed.
Yeah, assumed.
And that's a really important point that the court made. They said, since terrorism coverage wasn't something, you know, directly negotiated back in 98, you can't hold Omni to a standard that didn't really exist.
Right. Makes you think about, like, how many things slip through the cracks like that in contracts?
Mm, yeah.
I mean, who could have possibly seen the impact of 9/11 coming?
Yeah, that's the real question, isn't it? And it shows why this whole case is relevant for so many things, not just insurance disputes, you know? Like, imagine you sign a contract today, and tomorrow, boom, some huge world event completely changes the whole industry you're in.
Right.
Does your contract still hold up?
Good question.
This case suggests that the courts, they're willing to consider, like, the context in which a contract was made.
Especially when something totally unexpected comes up.
Exactly, yeah.
So the court basically said all risk in this case, this specific contract, it didn't actually cover terrorism after 9/11 because, well, industry standards had shifted. Okay, puzzle one solved.
Uh-huh.
But now we got to, like, untangle this second legal question.
Mm-hmm.
Was Wells Fargo's request for terrorism insurance, was it really reasonable? Even though it was never specifically mentioned in the original agreement.
Right, right. And here's where that other reasonable insurance clause becomes, you know, central to the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
Remember, the contract allowed Wells Fargo to ask for additional coverage.
Right.
But was this specific request, you know, in this particular situation, was it reasonable?
Yeah.
The court didn't just, like, pull a decision out of thin air, right?
Right.
They looked at a bunch of factors.
Like what?
Well, the first one's kind of obvious. The world had changed after 9/11. Terrorism was way more of a threat than it had been just, like, a few years earlier.
Right.
And that context is super important. But they also looked at, you know, what was going on in the industry. They found that a lot of other hotel owners, essentially Omni's competition, they were choosing to buy this separate terrorism coverage after 9/11.
So it was becoming more, like, the norm?
Yeah, yeah. It was becoming pretty standard practice.
Okay, so it wasn't like Wells Fargo was asking for something totally crazy.
No, not at all.
They were asking for, like, what everyone else was doing.
Exactly.
But I'm guessing Omni was still, like, worried about the cost.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Omni argued that the cost was way too high. It was prohibitive.
Mm-hmm.
But here's another interesting thing. The court found that the actual price tag on the terrorism insurance, about $300,000 a year for $60 million of coverage, it wasn't actually unreasonable, you know, considering the kind of financial disaster they were trying to avoid.
That's still a lot of money. But I guess when you're talking about, like, potential losses in the tens of millions, it kind of puts things in perspective.
Right, right. It's all relative, I guess.
Sounds like the court was trying to, like, find that middle ground, balance the needs of both sides.
Yeah, for sure. And there's one more really important factor they considered, Wells Fargo's own responsibilities.
Mm.
Remember, they had a fiduciary duty to protect the lenders who had put money into this whole deal.
Right.
That meant they had to act in the best interests of those lenders, you know, even if it meant pushing back against Omni.
So it wasn't just about Wells Fargo covering themselves.
No.
They had, like, a legal obligation to be responsible on behalf of their investors.
Precisely, yeah. Now, let's imagine a different scenario for a minute.
Okay.
What if, back in 1998, Omni and Secor had been, like, super specific in their contract? What if they'd said straight up whether terrorism coverage was part of all risk, or even thought about, like, what might happen in the future? You know, things like terrorism exclusions becoming a thing.
That's a really good point.
Mm-hmm.
It shows how crucial it is to think beyond just the present when you're, you know, drafting a contract.
Right.
It's about trying to anticipate those potential risks, even the ones that seem, like, super unlikely at the time, and addressing them directly in the agreement.
Totally, yeah. Because they might have thought they were being thorough by saying all risk.
Yeah.
But this case shows that sometimes you got to go deeper, really define those terms that seem obvious, just to avoid confusion later on.
Right, right.
So after considering all of these things, the changed risk landscape, what was happening in the industry, the, you know, relatively reasonable cost of the insurance, and Wells Fargo's duty to protect the lenders, the court ended up siding with Wells Fargo.
Hmm.
They basically told Omni, look, we get it. This wasn't explicitly spelled out in the original deal, but the world's different now, and you need to adapt. Omni was given a choice, get the terrorism insurance, or Wells Fargo would force place it.
Force place.
Yeah, meaning they'd get the coverage themselves and probably charge Omni a higher premium.
Oh, I see.
Not the outcome Omni was hoping for, I imagine. But it brings up an interesting question about this whole force placed insurance thing.
What does that even mean? Like,
yeah.
How does it affect the borrower?
Good question. Basically, force placed insurance is a tool that lenders can use when borrowers, you know, don't fulfill their insurance obligations that are like outlined in the contract.
Uh-huh.
It's not really meant to be a punishment or anything.
Okay.
It's more about protecting the lender's investment.
Makes sense.
Think of it this way. You lend someone millions of dollars for some big project, right?
Yeah.
And they refuse to get insurance that's pretty much standard in the industry.
Right.
You'd want some way to protect your money, wouldn't you?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to be left holding the bag if something catastrophic happened.
No way.
Right, exactly. So force-placed insurance, it lets the lender step in, get that necessary coverage, and then bill the borrower for it.
Makes sense.
It's a way to make sure that the asset, in this case the hotels, are, you know, properly protected, even if the borrower isn't really keen on doing it themselves.
Right, right. It's like a safety net for the lender.
Exactly, yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah, they got to protect themselves somehow. So we've seen how a phrase like all risk can get really complicated.
Yeah.
And how events that, like, no one could have predicted can totally change the rules of the game. What are the big takeaways here? What can we learn from all this, you know, as future lawyers or even just like regular people who might sign a contract someday?
Well, I think the first thing is this case is a huge reminder that, you know, the devil's often in the details. All risk doesn't always mean like literally every single risk. There are exclusions, and those exclusions, they can change over time, especially when big events happen.
That's like that whole thing they tell us in law school about reading the fine print, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What seems super clear at one point can become like totally murky and open to interpretation when the world changes around you.
Exactly. And that's why this case really highlights how important it is to draft contracts with as much precision as you can. Being vague or leaving things open to, you know, broad interpretation, it can really backfire, especially when you're dealing with something as complex as insurance.
So how could Omni and Secor have avoided this whole mess? Like, what could they have done differently back in 1998 when they were putting this agreement together?
Well, for one thing, they could have defined all risk more specifically. They could have laid out exactly what that meant in the context of their agreement, you know?
Right.
It might sound kind of tedious, but they could even try to think about different future scenarios, like what if the standard industry exclusions change, almost like a what-if clause for the insurance world.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Huh.
Because they probably thought they were being thorough by just saying all risk. But this case shows that sometimes you have to go deeper and really define those terms that seem obvious just to avoid problems later on.
Right. And they could have even addressed the whole terrorism thing head on, even though it wasn't a big deal at the time. They could have said specifically whether it was included or excluded and who would pay for it if it became a separate issue.
So it all boils down to like thinking ahead and trying to anticipate problems.
Yeah.
It might seem like overkill when you're in the moment.
Yeah.
Especially if you're dealing with something that feels like really unlikely. But as we've seen here, a little bit of prevention can save you a ton of legal headaches later on.
Absolutely, yeah. Prevention is key. Now, this case also brings up some interesting questions about what role the courts play in interpreting contracts, you know. On one hand, they're supposed to uphold the agreements that the parties made. They shouldn't be rewriting contracts after the fact.
Right.
But on the other hand, they also have to consider the real-world context. Sometimes sticking rigidly to the exact words of the contract can lead to results that are unfair or even just don't make sense, especially when the world has changed in a big way.
So it's like they have to find that balance, right?
Yeah.
Honoring the original intent of the contract, but also acknowledging that the world doesn't always stay the same.
Exactly. It's a delicate balance. Mm. And in this case, the court was definitely trying to do just that. they recognized that all risk didn't literally mean every possible risk in every situation. And they considered the fact that industry standards had changed a lot since 1998.
But they also recognized that Wells Fargo's request for terrorism insurance was, like, a reasonable response to a real threat. It wasn't like they were just trying to exploit the situation.
Right, exactly. They weren't going to let Ani off the hook just because they'd signed a contract before the world changed. So as we wrap up this deep dive into Omni Berkshire v. Wells Fargo, let's go back to that first question we asked. How do we write contracts today that can withstand those unforeseen events, those black swan events that can completely upend everything we expect? I think this case gives us some pretty clear guidance.
It sounds like the main takeaway is to be super specific, right? Like, really define those key terms, like all risk in this case.
Yeah.
And don't be afraid to consider those what-if scenarios that might seem crazy now but could have a huge impact later.
Exactly. It's like future-proofing your contracts. You're not just agreeing on what's happening today. You're building a framework for handling potential changes down the line.
Yeah, like building in flexibility and foresight. You can't predict everything, but you can try to make a contract that can adapt to those unexpected twists and turns.
Exactly. And remember, contracts are living documents. They don't exist in some, like, theoretical bubble. They're meant to be used in the real world, and the real world is always changing. So be ready to revisit your agreements, renegotiate terms if you need to, and adapt to those changes. It's not about predicting the future perfectly. It's about having a system that can handle whatever comes next.
And that's where having a good lawyer comes in.
Right, oh, absolutely.
A skilled attorney can help you think about potential risks, write clear and thorough agreements, and, you know, navigate all those tricky parts of contract law.
For sure, they can be a huge help. So there you have it, Omni Berkshire v. Wells Fargo, a case that started with a loan agreement and ended up showing us some really fundamental things about contracts, risk, and how to handle a world that, well, rarely goes according to plan.
We hope this deep dive has given you a new understanding of the finer points of contract law, how important it is to write things clearly, and the fact that we always need to be ready to adapt to a world that loves to throw curveballs. Keep these lessons in mind, and remember, sometimes the most important parts of a contract are the parts that think about what might happen, not just what is happening.
That's all the time we have for today's deep dive, but we encourage you to keep exploring this case. Dig deeper into how contracts are interpreted and think critically about how we can create agreements that are strong and adaptable in a world that's full of uncertainty.
Until next time, stay curious and keep diving deep.